Okay, so Paul gives us that picture of leadership. We're going to come back to that at the end of chapter 2. Well, let's go ahead and move on here. I'll go ahead and read Philippians chapter 2, 12 through 18. Therefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, so now not only as in my presence, but much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who works in you, both to will and to work for his good pleasure. Do all things without grumbling or questioning, that you may be blameless and innocent, children of God without blemish in the midst of a crooked and twisted generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world, holding fast to the word of life, so that in the day of Christ I may be proud that I did not run in vain or labor in vain. Even if I am to be poured out as a drink offering upon the sacrificial offering of your faith, I am glad and rejoice with you all. Likewise, you also should be glad and rejoice with me. All right, what does that say? There's a lot of words. Sometimes when we read Paul, we're kind of like, whoa, what did all that say? You ever get that feeling when at church, whenever there's a reading and you're like, I don't know what he just said. Everyone's nodding their head saying, yeah, oh, that happens to me all the time. I want to paint a picture for you what I think he's saying here. That I'm not going to use his wording, but I think this is, Paul's mind is pretty crazy. He's got a crazy mind, but it's a good one, and it's one that we should really take a look at. Yeah, so there's this, maybe I can paint a picture for you with this. There, in the city of Barcelona, I've been to Barcelona twice. I'm in the kids stage right now, right? I've got a 9-year-old, 7-year-old, 20-month-old. You guys all know that. But 10 years ago, I was traveling quite a bit throughout the world. And Alicia had traveled quite a bit as well. We've been to Barcelona twice. Anyone been to Barcelona? All right, Dan Dusek's been to Barcelona. Oh, man, it's an amazing place. So in the city of Barcelona, there is a fantastic church called Familia de Sagrada. Dan, did you ever go to Familia de Sagrada, the cathedral by Gaudi?
Yes, I saw it from the outside.
Okay, yeah. So Gaudi decided to build this cathedral. I'm going to get the dates incorrect, but let's say sometime from 1870 to, in fact, it just got finished, maybe like 10 years ago. Just an incredible building in the middle of this city. And this guy who built it, I might be getting some of the details incorrect, he actually died and he never finished the building. But his goal was just to build this amazing cathedral in an area of town. But here's this beautiful building. And he wasn't even going to be able to finish by the time that he was done. But it was something that he just started that would just beautify the entire town around him. Go ahead and Google it. Familia de Sagrada. It's one of the most unique buildings in the world. It's really fantastic. What I think Paul's saying here is that Paul's saying he's one like that architect who's just going to build a bad, crooked, and a lost generation, he says in our text. And his focus is just going to be on building that building. And he may die, he says here in this text. But his belief is that these folks will continue to build that building and that it's a beautiful structure and that in the end it will shine throughout the world. I think that's what he's saying here. This, you know, how that this has tremendous impact on how we can live right now. Because in a lot of ways we're kind of living in dark times, right? We're living in times in which we're a little more isolated than we once were. How can we build buildings? And you understand what I'm saying with buildings. How can we build a life in all the chaos around us that shines brightly around the people around us? And in our own life, we can get to hold on to the legacy that we leave behind, and that building still shines in the midst of a kind of a chaotic time. I think that's what Paul's saying here. Chapter 2. Now, I didn't use any of his words. I got into his mind. I read Paul a lot. I think that's what Paul's doing here. So here's the question. Paul is looking once more to the day of the Messiah, the day in which God will bring the whole return of Jesus. He doesn't know whether he will live to see that day, but he has designed a building. The builder working at the way he showed them will stand out as one thing of beauty. Look at my picture now. Do you see what he's doing here? So how can we, I want you to think personally, how can we be signs of life in a world that only knows the way to death? What can we do to kind of be that shining star or that that building that's just so beautiful around everyone that lives around us? How can we shine in these days? How are you shining these days? Are you shining? Rick says, doing for others?
Becoming a servant, yes.
Can we shine in these days? We can. We can shine in these days. In fact, in a lot of ways, I'm going to make the argument, and Paul would agree, that we have the ability to shine brighter than we ever have because it's so dark. So this is just encouragement for us to do just that. Be thinking of ways to shine and not blend in with the darkness around. All right, back to this ending of Philippians chapter 2 here. Paul has these two people he's going to mention. One is Timothy and one is Epaphroditus. And I just want to pay attention. I just want you to catch just a little thought here. I'm going to read just 19 through 24. We're going to focus on Timothy here first. Paul says this in chapter 2, verse 19. I hope in the Lord Jesus to send Timothy to you soon, genuinely concerned for your welfare. For they all seek their own interests, not those of Jesus Christ. But you know Timothy's proven worth, how as a son with a father he has served with me in the gospel. I hope, therefore, to send him just as soon as I see how it will go with me. And I trust in the Lord that shortly I myself will come also. These are powerful words here by Paul about a young man named Timothy who followed him in training. Paul mentored Timothy. I'll go ahead and read this paragraph. It is interesting that Paul doesn't say, notice how the compliment he doesn't give Timothy. Paul doesn't say, Timothy is a wonderful teacher. Ooh, isn't that how we talk about people today? Or the skill that someone has. Bob is a fantastic artist. Or Barbara can, sing. All those are wonderful things. That's not what I'm saying. But notice what Paul compliments about Timothy. Complimenting his character, not his skill. It is interesting that Paul doesn't say Timothy is a wonderful teacher, or even Timothy is a very devout and holy man and says his prayer all the time. Paul says this, Timothy will genuinely care for you. Character statement. The definition Paul seems to be adopting for a good pastor, by the way, Timothy was a pastor, but let's not be thinking pastors here, that he himself was like this, has more to do with sheer unselfish love than anything to do with the person themselves. Indeed, Paul contrasts Timothy favorably with others. Now, he doesn't name any of those other people, but he paints a bleak picture of other Christians working in Ephesus at the time. The others, Paul says, are looking for their own interests only, rather than those of Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. Timothy is different. So again, let's capture this. Yep. 2 minutes. Yep. Yeah. Do we oftentimes think people are good because of their skill or because they genuinely care for others? That's an interesting debate. Paul never talks about his skill. Paul talks about his genuine love for others. You see the picture here? This is drastically different than our world. Any comments on this from those that are here or anything online? We just got a couple minutes before we close out.
A lot easier to see someone killed and have to get to live and get to know them.
Jonathan, a lot easier to know someone by their skills, because they do things, than to know their character. Great comment. Or who they are. I a Lutheran school teacher gave me some of the best advice for parenting that I've held on to. She told me when you compliment your kids, don't compliment them for their looks or their skills always. Compliment them by their character. And if that's the focus, that's, you know, and that stung me when she shared that with me when we had our first daughter. It was like, I really need to focus on that, not skills. Cause I want kids with skills. I want that basketball player. Other comments as we close out today?